Well, good evening. This is Bill Blatchford, and I want to welcome you to this call tonight. This is what we call our monthly A-book call. Of course, we named it after our book, Playing Your A-Game. And I've been looking over the roster of doctors tonight. We have about 40 doctors registered on the call tonight. I know several of you were contacted this afternoon to have some input put into this for questions you'd like to have answered. We will do our best to answer your questions tonight. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Angela Cameron from Johnson City, Tennessee. Angela, are you there?
I'm here, Bill.
Very good. I'm very pleased tonight with tonight's call. We have doctors here looking at the roster. We have people from as far in the northeast as Connecticut, as far in the southeast as Florida, as far northwest as Washington, and as far in the southwest as San Diego. So we've pretty much covered all four corners of the country. I see quite a few out there in the middle as well. And I know for you on the East Coast, this is getting late, so I want to make sure that this call is valuable to you tonight. Dr. Cameron practices in a small town. It's a small town in Tennessee. It's a coal-producing town, a town of about 60,000 people. Dr. Cameron's only been out of dental school for 5 years. She bought a practice, a pretty good-sized practice, from a doctor who she thought was going to stay for 2 years, and she stayed for 3 weeks and left. And here she was a few weeks out of dental school and left with this practice. And she's done an amazing job with it before she met us. However, in the last year, she's taken this practice from just a little bit over $1 million to $1.6 million. Now, the fun part about that is, and I know that Dr. David Bradley wrote in and wanted to know his main question, how much that 50% growth is net. The interesting thing is that was the main thing we worked on, because we weren't as interested in growing this practice as we were increasing Angela's net and decreasing the amount of time that she was working. Angela was one of these doctors that spent her 3 days seeing patients, and by the way, that is all she sees patients is 3 days a week. She has an associate there for 2 days who does things she does not want to do, small fillings, root canals, etc. But she was also spending 3 more days down there doing clerical work, doing things that a lot of doctors sit at their desk in their private office and do. And she was also down there a lot in the evenings. Now, she and her husband have a family, and she said, wait a minute, this is not the way I planned it. Now, the overhead, the biggest thing in the overhead that changed was that the staff, when we started, was at 38% of her gross. Today, her staff is bonusing at the 20% level, which means that she comes in under for 20% each month, and then her staff earns bonuses back up to bring her into the 20% level. So tonight, what we're going to do, I'm going to be asking Dr. Cameron some questions. Some of you wrote in some questions, and I would like you to talk about some or ask some of these questions yourself. If you have a question for Dr. Cameron, this is your chance when we call for questions to hit your 6 button. Introduce yourself and just ask her a question. She's very open. I really appreciate her willingness to be on this call, because she bears her soul here and on these calls. We really, people ask a lot of questions, and we find out what's really going on in the practice. So to start out with, I'm just going to ask Dr. Cameron. Angela, could you give us just a little background on yourself, where the practice was when you started this program roughly a year ago, why you joined our program, what you were trying to accomplish, and just tell a short version of your story, what happened since.
Right. When I first joined the program about a year ago, our practice, you know, I thought I had a good practice going. We were producing and collecting over $1 million. You know, just being 5 years out of dental school, I thought that was great. But the problem was, each time my production went up, it seemed like my take-home pay went down. And that was a concern for me. And my solution to that was just to spend more time at the office doing paperwork.
A lot of doctors do that. They confuse activity with productivity.
Right, and I thought if I just looked at the right statistic or looked at the right monitor, I would figure out why I wasn't making more money, even though the practice kept growing. And I was really reaching the point of being very frustrated professionally, and that was unfortunately carrying over in my personal life, because I wasn't spending the amount of time at home with my family that I wanted to. And I was really at the point where I needed help, and I knew I couldn't figure it out on my own. So when I met Dr. Blatchford, he really helped me analyze my practice with where we were. But before he even looked at my practice numbers, he wanted to know, well, where do you want to be, Angela? What are your goals? And he basically customized a program for me based upon my goals. And then once we knew where my what my goals were, he looked at where we were in the practice, and then he helped me develop a game plan or a roadmap of how to get there because, you know, if you're traveling anywhere, you have to have a starting point, and then you have to have where you want your final destination, or else you end up roaming aimlessly, and you may get where you want to go or you may not. And that was really key, was him helping me, you know, flesh out what my vision was and putting those goals down in writing and helping get a game plan to get there.
So give us a little that's just basically what was the plan, what did you do? Several of the doctors would like to know, you know, how did you get your team on board, for example? How did you develop a vision? Let's kind of take these in order. Some would like to know how to increase patient acceptance. Some of them just want to know some basic business strategies. Let's talk first about the vision. How did you, I mean, you were pretty clear on your vision. You knew what you wanted. Well, let me put it this way. I think at the time, if I remember right, you and your husband probably knew more about what you didn't want than what you wanted. You knew you didn't want to be working as much as you were.
Exactly. We knew we didn't want to be working as much as we were. We knew we wanted to take home more money. We knew we wanted higher satisfaction. We knew we wanted more time off.
Mm-hmm.
And those were things we knew we wanted. And then, you know, we had a vision. You know, we had one of those written visions that was framed in a very nice gilded frame and was reception area and on the website. But the thing was, we weren't really living our vision. And I know now it's more of those things. We're really walking the talk, not just talking it. We would give our vision, you know, lip service, for lack of a better word. And one of the key components was getting our team on board. And the thing was, I didn't really have to motivate them or do anything. I basically let them know it was their choice. You know, this is where the practice is going, and it's your choice if you want to choose to be part of where we're going or not. And if you don't want to be part of this, then, you know, no hard feelings. You know, we'll find someone who does want to be part of this.
And now, Angela, if I can ask you a question, was this tough for you?
It was. You know,
yeah.
As a female, you know, there may be some female dentists on the call, and I don't mean to speak out of turn, but as a female, you know, sometimes I get a little bit more emotional about things, and I know that one of the things that that Bill, you really helped me with was when I feel that uncomfortableness, to understand that that's actually a good thing if I'm uncomfortable, because that means I'm growing, that means I'm changing. And anytime
I appreciate your outlook on that, Angela, because there have been a few times where I know that I've pushed you beyond your comfort zone.
Right, and it's one of those things, I'm always grateful for that, because had I been left to do it on my own, I probably would have stayed within my comfort zone. And to grow your practice to that level, you really have to experience some uncomfortableness. Just because, like I said, anytime there's change, anytime there's growth, just because it's change, it's going to feel a little uncomfortable to you.
So you had a group of people, and you described what your vision was to them, and you basically gave them a choice with the, I will say, with the authority that if they chose to go with you on this journey, that would be wonderful. But if they chose no, you were perfectly willing to let them go. It's really their choice. And by the way, you did keep many of them, didn't you?
I did. When I started your program, we had 17 members. We eliminated two positions completely. Let's
talk about that for just a moment.
Yes.
You had 17 members doing about $1 million, and you eliminated two positions. Now, for doctors that have not been around what I teach, that is basically we needed about four or five. We knew that. And actually, I still think Andrew's a little heavy on staff, but since her staff is bonusing, it's really their choice. But we eliminated positions, unneeded positions. In every practice I've watched, and I've worked with somewhere, I don't know, 2,500 officers or so, I noticed that we keep creating positions. We hire people. We don't really train them. Then we hire them a helper, creates a new position. And this is something that Angela had found. I mean, she had fallen into the trap that I'd say most dentists fall into. Instead of spending that time in leadership and creating the clarity of the direction and then training and then giving people that choice that Angela is talking about, this is what we want to do. This is the level of service that we want to provide for our patients. Do you want to be part of that? And then we don't train them enough, and so we create these assistants to the assistants position. And that's what Angela's talking about. We eliminated two positions down to five, and then I believe, but I think, didn't four of your original team stay with you?
They did. We had we eliminated two of the positions, and then one team member chose that they weren't in line with my vision. And it was a day of joy when they resigned, to be quite honest. I know that sounds, I don't mean it to sound crass at all. She's a wonderful person. She just wasn't in line with my vision, and she's happier now where she is, and I'm much happier now that I have another team member that's in line with my vision.
Angela, could you be a little more specific about that? What do you mean by not in line with your vision?
Not in line with my vision in terms of just what was expected as the team.
Mm-hmm.
We all arrive early for the morning huddle, and then we end together. We help each other finish, and we have an evening huddle. And that team member, basically, because she had a child 2 years old, and I have a son about the same age as her child, she felt as if she should be allowed to miss the morning huddle, come in late, and then leave early so she could go pick her child up from childcare.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically wasn't in line with, you know, being true to the team and being 100% with the team, because the team was committed to being there for the morning huddle, being there for the evening huddle. It's a critical part of our day. And that was maybe one of the more minor things she wasn't in line with. And basically she just wasn't supportive of my vision.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where we were going with the practice. And she was a doubting Thomas. You guys probably know what doubting Thomases are. They just, you know, you've got this great vision, you've got this great ideal, you're climbing the mountaintop, and you got the one person there at the back saying, I don't think we're going to make it. I don't see how we're going to do it. She's just bringing everybody down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just great that she left. Because if she didn't leave,
we're a big believer in is surrounding yourself with a great team and surrounding yourself with positive people. And one of my premises for years, for you doctors listening, is that team members are like light bulbs, and we hire them for light. And some of them actually give off more heat than light. And so we have to sort through all of that and figure out, okay, what it is, which ones are which, because I don't know about all of you, but I wake up in the morning, I have a finite amount of energy. I've been told I have a lot of it, and I've been accused of being the Energizer Bunny. But at the same time, I still wake up with a finite amount of energy. And that energy, and if you remember, if all of you go back to your physics, energy is never created or destroyed. It's just changed its form. Now, my energy has to be in your energy, and it means devoted to yourself and your family, and then your patients. And the systems in your office really shouldn't take much energy. But if they take energy because the systems, and I'm talking about staff, personnel, staff, all that sort of thing, if they require energy to get them on board, it takes away from that finite amount of energy that should go into yourself, your family, and your patient care. And that all detracts. And it's really interesting. I have worked with doctors over the years that do anywhere from 350 a year to, I guess, I'm going to leave out the two top producers, but we'll say 3 million. Interesting thing is that the doctors doing 3 million or 2 million or 1.6 million like Angela's doing, they don't expend any more energy than their doctor doing 500. It's just that her systems are now better, that they don't require the energy. And part of those systems is having the right team on board. So the answer is, how do you get your team on board is really describe the vision. An early mentor of mine used to say, describe the bus. And the question is, do you want to go with me? And one of the big mistakes that I see is that doctors are pleasers, doctors are helpers, and I understand that concept real well. I mean, I was a dentist for 20 years, and I understand that as a personality type of a dentist. We want to help everybody, and I actually think I can help everybody, and sometimes I let that get the best of me. And one of the biggest mistakes that I see that doctors make in this regard is they try and talk people into the vision or talk people into being on board. It's a huge mistake. Either they choose yes or they choose no. And either way, we're fine with it. And like Angela said, this lady's a wonderful young lady, wonderful mother, but she did not see the vision that Angela saw it, the way she wanted to run her practice. Very good. Well, let's talk numbers for a little. Let's stay with the systems a little bit. One of the things that you said that when you started the practice, I heard you say this tonight, you were doing a lot of hours doing, you were doing a lot of time doing clerical work, and now you've eliminated that. So you've basically eliminated all your evenings, and you were not seeing patients. You were down there doing clerical things that now your staff does for you.
Right, exactly. I don't know how I got into that paperwork. I don't know how I got into the situation of where I was doing so much paperwork. The dentist whose practice I purchased, their spouse did all that paperwork, so they didn't have like an outside person who was doing it, and there wasn't a team member doing it. So when I took over the practice, I took over doing both what the dentist was doing and their spouse was doing, and it kind of just kept growing and growing. And like I said, I kept thinking if I monitor the right number or look at the right statistic, I could figure out why I wasn't making more money. And it just kind of snowballed. And I'm a much better dentist than I am a bookkeeper. So I wasn't using my talents very wisely.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't get home till 7 or 7.30 at night, even though I'd finished seeing patients at 4.30. Even though I only saw patients Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I would often be in the office Monday for 6 hours, Friday for 6 or 7 hours. Sometimes I would even be there on Saturdays or Sundays, and it was just really not a very healthy situation.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk to the doctors for a moment or on this call, and I know some of you are looking at the names here. Many of you have been on several calls, and one of the things I'd like to make a point of tonight is that, to me, quality of life is way more valuable and way more important than how much money you make. Because I don't care how much money you're making if you have no life. If you're not seeing your family, you're not seeing your spouse, you have no time for yourself, for study, for exercise, what's the point? And this is, Angela is not so different than so many doctors are seeing. In other words, our success is killing us. And so I see some very busy practices that the doctor has no life. And so this is what makes me feel, I mean, I'm more excited about this for Angela than Angela and her family than I am the extra $500,000. And Angela told me today, we were talking about this call tonight, and she mentioned to me that her take-home pay has more than doubled since she started. And that's real nice. But here's the truth of that, in my opinion. Angela and her family had not missed a meal before we started the program. She was making a good living. I mean, she was in that category of people that the politicians all referred to as the wealthy people who were going to tax more. She was already there. But she had no life. And so to me, this is the important part. Tell me a little bit about the amount of time that you're working. You're working 3 days a week. You're taking quite a bit more vacation time, too, I believe.
Yes, we're having, this week we have scheduled 6 weeks off, and it's paid vacation for the entire team, the entire time they're off. And again, that still is keeping the salaries at that 20% or less level. And it's really wonderful. And their quality, my team's quality of life has improved as well. There's a lot less stress at the office. And I wanted to go back to a point you were making before when you were talking about quality of life. That was one of the main reasons I signed up. It wasn't necessarily that, you know, it wasn't about the money for me, even though that's been a wonderful added benefit. It truly has.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I was concerned that I was headed for early burnout with the dental profession. And to me, getting the quality of life better was more important than anything, and I found with your program, by focusing on that, the money has just been a nice side added bonus.
Well, let's talk about money for a little bit. When we started, I know you had an accountant who was doing your books for you. I mean, you still didn't know what your overhead was, if I remember right. And I remember we sat down at that first day we do our summit, you and your husband, and you know, I looked at that. And I remember sitting there and telling you that your overhead was close to 75%, maybe on the high side of that. You were shocked, but didn't really have a clue. But the biggest problem was the overhead for staff was 35, 38%. And we got that in place. I know that's impacted your your personal take-home quite a bit.
Yes, pretty much all of that has translated into take-home pay for me.
How much would you say your take-home has increased?
It's at least doubled, and I think within the next 6 months it may even triple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about hours. Somebody asked the question, did you add hours to capacity hours, which means did you add hours to your office or hours that somebody's there besides yourself?
No, we didn't add any hours. I see patients 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I have an associate dentist who sees patients on Monday and Tuesday, so we're actually open 4 days. We didn't add any hours. We actually cut back our hours. We used to see patients until 5 p.m., Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Now we finish at 4:30, all of those days, so the team can be home by 5 with
mm-hmm.
their children.
So the whole team is home by 5 o'clock?
Oh, yeah. We have our today we had our end of the day huddle at 4:30, and we all left right after we huddled. And on Thursdays, we actually finish seeing patients at 3 o'clock so we could start our weekend early.
mm-hmm. And did you add hygiene time? I mean, how did you raise your production so much?
You know, we didn't add hygiene time. One of the positions we eliminated, we had three hygienists. One of the three hygienists was a part-time hygienist, and we just eliminated that position. And we did have 50-minute hygiene increments in order to better serve our patients. We've now transitioned that to 60-minute hygiene increments. So we've actually decreased our hygiene capacity, but we're seeing a higher quality of patients. And basically, what I realized, what was a big aha moment for me, was when I realized that in 1 hour of doctor time, I could produce more than a hygienist could all day.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things that we teach. And for those doctors on the call tonight, that I put that down as an aha. There are many consultants out there that promote increasing the hygiene time and accelerating hygiene time. And the interesting thing is, if you double your hygiene production in a given day, that equals about one unit of Crown Bridge, or as Angela says, 1 hour of doctor time. You can outproduce your hygienist all day. And what amazes me, we did Angela's numbers, and Angela, I'm going to throw this at you tonight because you didn't know this, but in preparation for this call, I went back and looked at your original information that you sent to us. And we worked out that our hygiene department at the time, with two full-time and one part-time, we figured that hygiene was losing $50 an hour for each hygienist every hour.
And that's where the money was going. I kept increasing production, and part of the way I had attempted to increase my production before I met Dr. Blatchford was to increase hygiene. But I was losing money by increasing hygiene.
This is an aha for every doctor we start with, especially those that have been through some of the hygiene acceleration programs and find out that, wow, they're still losing money in hygiene. So let's make it faster and let's make it up on volume. And I learned this myself at my own practice. At one time, I brought some early soft tissue people into the practice I had in Corvallis, Oregon, and I developed a hygiene department doing 10 days a week. That was three hygienists on Mondays and Tuesdays, two hygienists Wednesdays and Thursdays, full-time hygiene coordinator, we called her. And her job was to keep the hygiene schedule filled, plus a full-time hygiene assistant. And one time I got a little disgruntled with the amount of money I was spending on team, and I did the math, and I discovered that actually I had 7.5 days of hygiene spread over 10 days. I'm paying for 10 days, but really only filling 7.5. Now, interesting thing is that every morning in our morning meeting, the hygiene schedule was filled, just like Angela's was. But we were dipping down into that third tier of patients trying to fill that hygiene schedule, and they didn't show anyway. So that's really where Angela was, a couple cancellations a day per hygienist, and all of a sudden you're losing money there. Angela, let's move on from hygiene. What did you do in the area of increasing case acceptance?
One of the great things was the group meetings that the team participated in as a team. There was some key training that took place under Dr. Blatchford's guidance that really helped the team learn how to find out what the patients wanted so that we could better serve their wants. And another key thing is we had always had team meetings once a month, but now we have weekly team meetings. And then we have, every 4 weeks, we have a 4-hour training session where we do things like role playing and things like that, and it's really taken our case acceptance to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not certain how detailed you want me to get, Dr. Blatch.
Well, one of the things that we believe is that nobody needs dentistry, nobody needs their teeth, and so it's a matter of finding out what people want. And instead of doing a real complex examination before the patient, before we find out what the patient wants, we spend some time with the patient finding out what they really want, what they've tried so far, how that's worked, and we find out about what their budget is. And before we start presenting a whole bunch of treatment, we find that out, and then we do our examination. After the patient decides roughly what it is they want to do, and they've been given some choices, and they decide, they tell us what they'd like to do next, and if they'd like to go ahead, well, let's work up a treatment plan for them. But you have several types of patients, but there are three main types. And one is the patient that wants the treatment, sees the value, and can afford it. Then you have patients that want the treatment, but they just simply cannot afford it. And then you have patients that want the treatment, see the value, but they... And can afford it, but I guess they don't see. I made a mistake. They don't see enough value to put the money into this. And so we want to figure out which ones they are before we start spending a lot of time. And that's one thing that Angela has done is work on the case acceptance. You know, let's talk a little bit here tonight. We have some doctors on this call that are concerned about the economy. And if I could just put a few comments in here first. You know, I read an interesting article in The Economist this month. Or this week, and The Economist, as many of you know, is a British magazine that is a news magazine that covers world news, and of course the United States is a large part of world news, and this British writer, journalist, finds it rather amusing that 6 months ago, 25% of the news in the United States had to do with the war in Iraq. Now, I wish we weren't in Iraq. Don't get me wrong, I'm not making a political statement in any way whatsoever, but in the last 6 months, this British writer, and I'm just quoting the British writer, the war in Iraq has been going quite well. We've had the lowest fatalities in 3 years during the last 3 months of Iraqi civilians and U.S. servicemen. And so all of a sudden, that was not news anymore. So they dropped that coverage of that down to 2%. Then they jumped on the economy. Now, the economy is an interesting thing because there's always money. You know, for example, my two brothers are farmers, and one of them has a master's in economics. And he was saying about the same thing, what you read about in the press is the high cost of food. He says, you don't read anything about the fact the American farmers make more money than they've made in 30 years, so the agricultural part of our country is doing really well. One of my brothers plays the stock market quite a bit. He's been telling me for the last several years, invest in John Deere. Well, John Deere has sat there around $85 a share for many years, and a few months ago, it split 2-for-1, and it's still $85. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about the energy-producing parts of the country, and that's one thing Angela told me was that, you know, her part of the country, they sell energy. It's coal mining country. And so the economy is doing well. Here in Central Oregon, where I live, housing values only went up 5% last quarter. And so a lot of this has been created, but a lot of your patients are reading about the economy. Angela, in this economy, in whatever it is, whatever it's real or perceived, it doesn't really matter, but how have you and your team gotten around this, all this story about the economy? You pick up a newspaper today, you turn on the television, you listen to the political candidates, and all they're doing is talking about the economy. How did you and your team get around that issue?
Well, basically, we just choose to bring our A game every day, and we read a lot of books, our team does, and some of the books actually have tips and help with how to deal when there are perceived economic slowdowns or what have you, and you basically just have to bring your A game every day, set yourself apart as being better, do more than what your patients expect, and then you won't have anything to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep doing the same old, then you may not be as in good shape as you want to be.
Well, one of the things that I've said is that the last 10, 12, maybe 15 years in dentistry have been pretty much a free ride for dentists. In other words, we've had a great economy. We're developing a nationwide shortage of dentists. And basically be successful in dentistry, all you have to do is show up.
Mm-hmm.
But when things get a little tighter, and things are a little tighter now, there's no question about it, although I have to brag a little bit. My clients, almost every client to a person is having a record year in 08 compared to 07 and 06. And they're telling me, well, in my area, the economy's not bad. And what was really surprising tonight, we had a conference call about 30 doctors, including a doctor from Detroit, Michigan, who said he's, this year, for the first 5 months of this year, he's had his biggest year in history, and he practices in Detroit. Because I was absolutely convinced that, and I was talking that night, and I said, unless you're in Detroit, Michigan, you probably don't have a real big problem. And he said, well, this doctor, I won't say his name right now, but he said, well, wait a minute. I've had my biggest year ever this year, and this is a big practice. This is a practice the size of Angela's. We're up in the $1.5 to $2 million range. And so the economy is real or perceived. You have to get around it. And so given that things are a little more difficult, we have to even do a better job than we've done in the past. And as Angela said, same old, when the market changes, or when the environment changes, won't get the same results. Okay, I've talked a little bit. Angela's talked a little bit. I'd like to open it up to some of the doctors on the call. So some of you, if you'll hit that six button on your phone, I'm going to call some of the doctors that we called today and ask you for some of your questions and comments. Just, this is your chance to ask Angela or myself what you'd like to have. Dr. David Bradley sent me a very nice email. Actually sent it through Janet, and Janet forwarded it to me. But any of you that would like to send questions in and would like questions answered and actually don't want to speak up tonight, all you have to do is email me at bill@blatchford.com, and we'll be happy to answer those questions for you or refer you to Angela. Angela has a busy practice, so I don't want to throw these questions over to her. David Bradley, any questions that you have that you want to ask directly to Angela?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, good. Thank you very much for talking tonight. I'm enjoying the telephone call, and Angela, it sounds like you've got a beautiful practice.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, you've been in practice for about 5 years, is that correct?
Yes, I graduated dental school in June of 2002.
Okay, and when you started practice and you bought the practice, how was that practice producing when you bought it?
It was producing a little bit over $700,000.
Okay, good. So you've just about doubled it in that length of time.
Yes, it's really been just really, I've been very blessed.
Good. Well, I've been spying on you and looking you up on the internet while we're talking. I'm sure other people are doing the same thing. And with your practice, I see that you've got American Cosmetic Dentistry memberships and things like that. What other kind of training and things have you had in that 5 years?
Right, and just to let you know, if you guys are visiting my practice website, we're actually in the process of a complete overhaul of the website, and that website was up, unfortunately it hasn't been updated since 2003.
Uh-huh.
Our new website will be ready within the next 30 to 60 days. So to let you know, unfortunately some of that content is just a little bit outdated. But basically I'm a sustaining member of the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. I'm working towards my accreditation. I'm also a member of DOCS, the Dental Organization for Conscious Sedation, the ADA, the AGD. I'm working towards my fellowship with the AGD. I'm also a member of the AADSM, the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. And those are the main...
And you've had some training at LVI, too, I believe.
Yes, I've had training. Most of my post-dental school training has been at LVI and with the Hornbrook Group.
Great. Now, when you're focusing on growing as quickly as you're trying to right now, is there one section of that you're focusing on more? Are you doing more sedation? Are you doing more? What are you doing?
We are really very fortunate that in our area, I did some key marketing things early on in my career. And we're really known for our smile makeovers. We do a lot of smile makeovers. And sedation dentistry is added as an adjunct to that. Typically, if I'm sedating a patient for treatment, it's because it's as part of a smile makeover. So basically, if someone calls our office, they know if they're calling Sophisticated Smiles that we're all about improving smiles, doing smile makeovers, comprehensive care, things of that nature. So we're very fortunate that you know, we already have patients at a certain level before they call our number.
There's a script. Well, you have your website, and then you also have some very good scripts on the telephone. I've called Angela's office as a mystery patient, and it's amazing how well they do and how they basically, I will say, screen the patients a little bit. They talk about money on the phone. They do an excellent job of bringing these patients in. Angela, when you started with us, and you're in a town that has a lot of insurance, and actually I was surprised to see how much insurance dependency you have. You still have a lot of insurance in your practice, don't you?
We do. When I first started the program, we were preferred providers for two insurances, and we're now transitioning to being insurance-free. But about 35% of our collections came from those two insurances that we're preferred providers for, 35% in the last calendar year. And my goal is to be insurance-free, and we've started, Dr. Blatchford and Janice have customized a program for us to step away from the insurance and do it in a way where the practice is not affected negatively, because you have to be very smartly, especially as dependent as we were.
Yeah, I want to emphasize that. There are some lecturers out there on the lecture circuit that say go home and drop insurance. That's a quick way to economic suicide. You absolutely cannot do that. You have to work out a plan. It has to be a plan that fits that particular practice and that particular community. But I'm definitely convinced that any practice in any community can become independent of insurance, and you can go off those provider rules, which allow you to charge whatever fee you feel is a fair fee. That's a good question, David. Any other questions for David?
I think you've hit on a couple of them already. I guess the last question I would have would be, what kind of, you mentioned some of the staff struggles and trying to grow as you go, but what's been the hardest struggle that you've had when you've tried to implement some of the things that Phil's been working on with you?
You know, I'll be quite honest. My main struggles with the team were at the very beginning when I didn't have the right team around me. The only problem is when I started Dr. Blatchford's program, I thought I had a pretty good team. But the thing was, I didn't know exactly what I needed in a team, and Dr. Blatchford really has helped coach me to see what kind of people I need around me for the best, most efficient, effective team. And so the struggles were mainly in the beginning, just making those decisions. I remember the first position I eliminated was the hygiene coordination position, and I was in tears over having to tell this person they didn't have a job anymore. And
not like that. You were in tears on the phone with me.
I was.
Telling me you were going to, you had to do it. You knew you had to do it. But
right.
I just can't do this, Bill. I just can't
I
do this. And I remember, and this is one of the things that I see in so many practices, David, is, you know, once you're clear on the direction you're going and once you have the right team, and I know a comment that Angela made to me a week or so ago was she thought she had the right team, but she didn't know what she was looking for. She truly did not know what she was looking for. And, you know, one of the things that I find so often is doctors will say, well, you know, I'd kind of like to do your program, but I want to get the right team in place. And to me, that's kind of a joke, because you've been trying to get a good team in place for 10 years or 15 years and haven't done it yet, and now you think somehow magically in 90 days you're going to make that happen. And the problem that I see is we go right back in and hire the same kind of people we let go, and we have the same problems over and over again. And in Angela's case, it was a matter of clarity of vision and giving the people the choice of where they wanted to be there. And part of that choice was, I mean, vision's a real kind of a esoteric thing, I suppose, and yet you have to bring it down to a practical level. And the one person she gave you the example of earlier was this person who, her vision was different. She wanted to come in at 9 o'clock in the morning and go home out early in the afternoon. And like Angela said, this patient's child was the same age as Angela's child. And Angela was there early in the morning for the team huddle, and somehow it worked for her. And this person's vision was different. A wonderful person. But her vision, or her version of the vision, was, you know, doctor, I'll follow your vision as long as it's convenient for me. Well, that wasn't part of Angela's vision. So the hardest thing is getting the right team. I think that's probably true.
Right, and just to go back to the follow-up with the question, a key point is we had a real turning point for my team was this past January when we all went. We finally had all of our team in place, the final piece of the puzzle, final team member. And now it's just really wonderful, because the team they're helping give me energy, help moving me towards my own vision. And it's just a fantastic feeling when you get that from your team. Because before I started Dr. Blatchard's program, I was always the one saying, come on, guys, we can do it. And now they're telling me, come on, Dr. Cameron, we can do it. It's just a really nice, nice.
Well, that's this energy that you bring to the office in the morning as the owner, as the dentist. And if you have to spend that energy trying to bring your team on board, see, that's energy that's expended that does not produce any results. And that's called friction. That's wasted energy. That's the, you go back to your vector forces in the second chapter of physics, and you've got energy going forward, but you've also got energy going the other direction. So that was good. Mark Collins, you had some questions today about downsizing the staff. Are you on the phone?
Yes, I was going from... Four, I had two in the front and two in the back, and then two hygienists, and I was looking at downsizing to one in the front and one in the back, and kind of working the same number of days as Angela's, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I've been practicing somewhat longer, so I think I'm getting older and tighter. But be that as it may, I wanted to get some advice about doing that and doing it in such a way that it wouldn't compromise what I'm delivering to my patients.
Well, if I can answer that for you, it's you can't expect one person to do what two people have been doing unless you change the systems, unless you provide them with different systems.
Okay.
So you have to change the systems. And as Ed Deming said, Ed Deming, for those of you on the call, was the man that developed what is called typically the Japanese management style. He was a statistician, mathematician from Princeton University, and this was back in the 40s. He developed some theories of management, and he went to Detroit and tried to sell his theories of management to GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and they all kind of laughed at this college professor who thought he could teach them how to run a car business better. So Truman sent him to Japan during the Reconstruction, after Detroit had rejected him, and he went to Toyota and Mitsubishi and used his theories with them. And isn't it interesting that now Toyota is the number one car company in the world and passed GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and they're now building cars in the United States and showing us how to do it over here. But those are all Ed Deming's theories that he professed. And one of the things that he said, that generally people don't fail, it's the systems that fail. And what I see is some people try to downsize their practice. And by the way, just for the record, we have very few clients under $2 million production with two people in the front office. It's just not necessary. However, you do need systems in place that will work with a smaller team. And one of the things that we find, if you simply downsize because you're trying to trim your budget a little bit or you're just tired of working with that many people, unless you change the systems, you better plan on everybody leaving, because they're already working hard, and just to eliminate people, it doesn't work. So what you have to do, Mark, is change your systems and make systems that are much more efficient.
Okay.
And that's what Angela did by eliminating two positions. She put some systems in place to make it more efficient. So, and those things are very well done, and one of the things that I see is that many doctors try and reinvent the wheel on these systems, and gosh, you don't have to. I mean, they're out there, and all you have to do is take an existing system that somebody else is doing with a small staff, add water and stir, and you can do it seamlessly if you take a proven system. But what I have found that many consulting companies are, the consultant is the next staff member. In other words, the person that your main primary contact person was a dental assistant last week, and this week she sent in to help you with your practice. And I can tell you, in those situations, the last thing in the world they look at is eliminating staff positions, because that's their sympathy lies there. And I say that it's very easy. I don't know what your production level is, but unless you're doing over $2 million, I have no idea why you have two people in the front. Now, that may sound like a crass assessment, but I'm serious about that. And the same thing, we have very few doctors. I have a few doctors that use two assistants. Angela is one of them. But and that's partly because Angela does a wide variety of treatment. I mean, she is really a general dentist, and she does quite a bit of sedation. She does a lot of things, and so she has two. But and then I find many practices are over hygiene. That is, we have more hygiene time available than we're actually filling. And in California, with what you're paying hygienists today, that's very expensive. You know, you're paying somebody $50 an hour, and they have two cancellations a day. I mean, that's $100 in salary going away with no income whatsoever. And I talked to a doctor in the Bay Area this morning that is probably going to increase his, so far this year, he just has me as his account, and in 3 months he's increased his net by $50,000. He's probably going to break $1 million of net income this year. And he has one hygienist, two assistants, and one in the front. And that's very doable. He'll break $2 million in production this year. Of course, he was up there over 1.5 last year as well. Very good. Good question. Other questions, Mark? Did that answer that question?
That answered it. That sounded good. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter. You can't just eliminate staff. I mean, I can tell you, I've seen doctors do this, and this is one of these things of reinventing the wheel. I think I'll just eliminate some staff members. I can tell you, it almost always fails. You'll end up losing all of them.
Dr. Blatcher,
yes.
Interject something. One key thing that Dr. Blatcher helped us do before I eliminated the positions was we did a task analysis of all of our team members to analyze where we needed to be more efficient so we could see exactly what we could eliminate and what systems, automated systems, could be used to eliminate what team members were manually doing.
Exactly.
And that was key. To
yeah, task analysis is a real interesting thing. It's you list the tasks that you do on a daily basis. You do one for daily, weekly, and monthly. Why do I do this task? In other words, what would happen if I didn't do it? How much time do I spend on it? Who else could do it, and who could we train to do it? And you take every task that you're doing in your office, and I can tell you there's a whole bunch of stuff going on that nobody needs to do, and yet everybody can justify what they do. Anyone else on the call tonight that would have a question for Angela or myself, and particularly for Angela? I mean, you can read what I know in all the dental journals, but particularly you don't get a chance to talk to Angela very often. So, questions
yes.
for Angela.
I do.
Go ahead.
Yes, hi. My name is Alona Bauer, and I'm practicing Chevy Chase, Maryland. And my question, Angela, is how long did it take you to get where you are, you know, in the production? From you said you've taken over 700, and you're almost down to no insurances. How long has it actually taken you since you've been with Dr. Blatchford to see the increase in your production?
I started with Dr. Blatchford. I had my summit in July of last year,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of slow getting out of the gates. I was a little.
That's what she thinks. I will say she was not slow at all.
But anyway, basically, once I had my my team together, and it took me a while to get the exact right mix of the team and the team positions, basically we started, our goal was January of this year, the team wanted to start bonusing. And they started bonusing in January. Every team member got between $200 to $300 for bonus. And
uh-huh.
we doubled that bonus every month until we reached, now they're bonusing around $1,500 per team member per month, and that's where we are at. So it really took from July through the, about 5 months or so for me to get the right team in place, to get the systems in place. And then, you know, this year we've just seen our production just jump per each month. I mean, we're so far ahead of where we were last year at this time. I mean, it's just really wonderful.
Of course, there's a recession going on.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm like you. You know, it's a recession for a mindset, so I don't particularly
Absolutely.
Subscribe
People
to that.
Chevy Chase, Maryland, all work for the government. They're on salaries, for heaven's sakes, and they get paid the same no matter what.
Exactly.
But it is
a state of mind, you know,
yes.
and I think media certainly throws you off. But I do think, like Angela had said before, that it's a matter of, providing that five-star service. My question is also, so you started, you basically, Angela, you reached your, would you say, your production goals Every month since January, it's been about 5-6 months it took you to get going.
I mean, you have to understand, we were reaching our production goals before that, but now we're like just really...
They've raised the goal.
We've raised our goals.
Yes, yes,
so,
I understand.
We're doing even more, and you know, the team, they want to, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to be even more efficient and more effective and see fewer people, but, you know, produce more. And one thing I wanted to go back and mention that I didn't mention before is I saw immediate benefits when I started Dr. Blatchford's program in my personal life. Yeah, I won't get into any too many details, but
sure.
He helped coach me on some personal things that I needed. I needed someone to give me some honest advice on, and he helped steer me in a good direction. So immediately I started seeing benefits in my personal quality of life when I started with this program.
What about Dr. Blatchford, and that's for Angela and both of you, how do you handle coaching on treatment presentations, you know, treatment plan, like comprehensive? I mean, what is the main goal, you know, when you've mentioned three, you know, inquiring about three types of patients, you know, those that can afford it, appreciate the value, and, you know, want the dentistry. And also the other two who obviously want it, appreciate it, can afford it, and those who just don't see the value, they can't afford it. I find that it's very common that the third, you know, the third version where they just the value is the issue more than anything else. How do you coach your, you know, clients, for instance, in treatment plan presentation?
Okay. How do you spell your name? Is it Bauer, like B-O-W-E-R?
It's actually like Eddie Bauer, B-A-U-E-R.
Oh. Being from Seattle, I know Eddie Bauer well.
Well,
here's the answer on that. First off, our three-quarters of the seminar time that we have during our year is based on case presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a very simple approach to business for years, and an early mentor of mine told me that you can solve almost anything in business by getting out and selling something. In other words, raise the income. And yet dentists have very little training in how to present treatment, and most of the paradigms out there in the presentation of treatment, in my opinion, are 180 degrees wrong.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we're trying to educate people into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest waste of time in the world. If education worked to change human behavior, there wouldn't be a single physician out there who smokes or is overweight and doesn't exercise very much. So let's take him aside, because he obviously missed pathology the day they talked about heart disease and lung cancer. Teach him, he'll quit smoking instantly. See, that's what we've tried to do in dentistry. And one of the things that I teach, is I think it's a really basic premise, is number one, nobody needs what we do. Teeth are discretionary. People can live long, useful life without teeth. You can't live without your kidneys or your heart or your liver or other organs, but you can live without teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually live a very long, useful life without teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find out what people want. And that's the thing that we do, is we teach the team, including the doctor, but actually it's the other team members who get very good at this, to find out what people want. And once we find out what they want, we find out how badly they want it. And one of the ways to find out how badly they want it is, what is their budget? And if it's that third group of people, you say, that really can afford it, but they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that we've learned to do is don't waste any more time on that patient. Now, that may sound to some of you like, oh, my gosh. But the truth is, you never convince them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so why bother? All you do is make them mad.
Right.
And so one of the things that we follow, there's a book written by a very successful man in Western Canada. It was about his name is Jimmy Patterson, and he wrote a book called Never Wrestle with a Pig.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and the reason is that, number one, you're going to get dirty.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And the pig loves it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when we're trying to talk someone in to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
See, we're trying to talk them into treatment based on our value system.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to convince them that our value system is the value system.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes you old.
Mm-hmm.
And the pig loves it. And
you,
so we
you do, right? So do you do one-on-one coaching? How do you do?
I
how
do.
Is it done?
Well, we
do,
do some seminars. We do some seminars with the entire teams. We have like 10 or 15 teams together at a time. The next one we have coming up is actually in Portland, Oregon. It's a two-day seminar in the fall, and then we do another two-day seminar about 6 months later. And then I have a consultant that actually works with your team members. We do conference calls. We do one-on-one calls. And I do one-on-one with a doctor. And plus, I do conference calls with the doctor. But,
and do you usually see the results when you take on a coaching client to do with, what is the timetable? I mean, considering that somebody had the clinical training and, is obviously willing and engaged and not resisting, but open to, to
well, all the Angela learning. Got results in 5 months. That's when she really started to see the results. And had Angela been willing or able, and, like she said to start out the call, she's somewhat of an emotional person and very attached to these staff members, and she had some wrong people. Had Angela been willing, and listen, I slow it down, speed up, whatever. I everybody's different.
Right.
And I'm not. I tell people I will not teach you or show you or push you to do anything immoral, illegal, or unethical.
Mm-hmm.
But notice I left uncomfortable out of the mix.
Yes,
Angela,
of course.
Angela will be the first one to tell you I pushed her way beyond her comfort zone many times. And in Angela's comfort zone was it took her 5 months to get the right team on board, and that's when things took off.
And so the person is really in contact with you on one-on-one basis? I mean,
that's correct.
Or there's a consultant, other people that are basically...
No, you're in one-on-one with me.
I see.
I only take 50 clients a year, so I can give them the service.
And this is throughout that year, for instance, you are committed to
no,
working
I don't work with clients in December, and I don't work with clients in August.
Okay.
I've taken August off for years. Even when I was practicing dentistry, I took August off and took our kids up on a sailboat in the San Juan Islands.
Fair and square, yes.
Life is short, and so
absolutely.
I don't work December or August, but the rest of the year, I'm available. Good question.
You are. Okay.
What else? Other people?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
This is Dr. Steve Ross from New York City.
Steve, what was your last name?
Ross, R-O-T-H.
Okay.
I've actually worked with you before.
Yes. Yeah.
Back. Yeah. At the Westchester Country Club.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah.
You worked with when Bill.
Bill Dennis.
Bill Dennis was doing that part of the program, and I came in and spoke once. Well, yes, I remember you.
Yeah. When it comes to budgeting, okay, my partners and I have been, throwing around the idea of using some type of public relations and marketing for our practice.
Uh huh.
And in a place like New York City, as probably any big city, that's a pretty big ticket item. You could end up spending anywhere from $6,000 to $7,000 a month, or up to $10,000-$12,000 a month.
That's correct.
With the hope that you can significantly increase your branding and your image, as well as the amount of revenue that you're doing. And we're kind of debating that right now, and we feel like we have some pretty good systems going already. What's your opinion on that?
Well, if you will look up on the internet, there's a young couple down in which I have permission to talk about. They're actually in our audio version of our book, Playing Your A Game. It's Colleen and Jason Ulipsky down in Jacksonville, Florida, and they actually have a PR person from New York City. And they are now featured in many national magazines. They've been on some talk shows, and that PR person put them there. Now, they just completed their second year in practice, starting from scratch. Now, they started with me 8 months before they opened their doors, which is unusual, but I think very forward-thinking. And they broke right out $1 million in the second year in practice. And they only have one employee, and their overhead is very low, because they just have the one employee. We call her a resistant. And they're both dentists. So both husband and wife are dentists. And when they do, Colleen does the surgery on the implants and Jason does the cosmetics, and they assist each other. That PR person has really created a lot of dentistry for them. They have used the PR person, and between the PR person and their website, and they keep their marketing budget somewhere in around 10% of their gross, which is around $100,000. For marketing, and that includes the PR person. And they are getting cases, full mouth rehab cases from their website. And part of that is the work the PR person is doing so people can help find that website. And that's very good. The biggest practice I've ever worked with is in New York City and has had a series of PR specialists most of his career.
And how do you help find that PR person?
You get on the internet and start finding people, and you interview, and you find out what kind of contacts they have, and you decide how what they charge and who they know, because that's what you're buying is who they know. You're buying their contacts, and like I say, one client has used a series of PR people, because once you are exposed to all their contacts, you move on to the next one.
Gotcha.
But you don't end up on talk shows and featured in magazines. Jason Nalitzky, this person got him in Vogue magazine 2 months after they hired her. He was quoted in Vogue magazine. No, Vogue or InStyle. I don't know. One of those. Yeah, one of those two major fashion magazines. He was quoted in an article about dentistry. And here this young man is 2 years into practice.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, that makes him the expert, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good to talk to you again.
Okay, yeah.
Who else is here? Well, that's a question for either one of us.
I just have my name is Dr. De La Rosa. I'm from New Jersey. And I'm actually now with a consultant myself. I have a consultant company that working with our office. My biggest concern, is I wanted to join your coaching. But how do you manage, dealing with all your clients? You said you take about 50 a year. How do you manage actually coaching them one-on-one, as you were mentioning before, especially from out of state?
Right now I have clients as far east as Berlin, Germany,
mm-hmm.
and as far west as Guam.
Really?
Yes. And I have quite a number of clients in the U.K., and I do it all by telephone and internet. There's a very wonderful thing called WebEx.
Mm-hmm.
And it's video. We can share documents. We can sit there and talk to each other. I can do it individually. I can do a group. It's absolutely amazing. And I don't have to come to your dental office. I haven't been. As a matter of fact, I've never been to Johnson City, Tennessee.
Okay.
I've been close to there, but I've never seen Angela's office. Probably never will see it. Maybe I'll go see her new office she's getting ready to build. But it's a rare thing when I go to a dental office.
And if I could interject something. I had consultants before Dr. Blatchford. I actually started with my first consultant 6 months before I graduated from dental school because I was being prepped to take over this practice. And I will tell you, I am so pleased with Dr. Blatchford's program. And I was a little apprehensive at first when I signed up about, how much one-on-one time will they be. And it's been so wonderful because the one-on-one time there's much more quality with it with Dr. Blatchford. He really empowers the doctor to be able to handle these situations. And I had consultants in the past where it's like they just wanted you to call them if you had a problem. They'd tell you what to do for that problem, but then they wouldn't empower you to take care of the next problem on your own. And so you just end up in this cycle of dependence upon talking to the consultant, whereas Dr. Blatchford empowers you to be able to, handle things on your own.
Thank you. Let me just explain a slight difference in philosophy, and Dr. De La Rosa, this may explain the difference.
Okay.
I'm a dentist. Mm-hmm. I practiced dentistry for 20 years. I produced $1 million in 1985, 1986, again in 1986. And I continued to do that, and then I decided, I've kind of climbed all the mountains in dentistry, and I decided to become a consultant. I decided to start teaching other dentists what I do, and the difference is this. I'm a business owner. I've met a payroll. The other difference is that I'm not interested in coming in and solving problems. Because if we come in and solve problems, all that happens is I go away, and next month there's another problem. And I would like you to come in and work with a doctor. And this is my biggest thing I'm so glad you asked this question, is that I've been a pilot for 35 years, and I love the view from 35,000 feet. And about a month ago, there was an article in Time magazine about the unmanned drones that we're now using in the Iraq War. And we're flying these unmanned drones out of an airbase in Reno, Nevada. But it goes back in warfare, clear back to Napoleonic Wars, that people were trying to figure out, if I could just see over the next hill and the other troops can't see me, I would have an advantage. And the view from 35,000 feet is a different view than you get when you're on the ground. And so many consultants, and listen, they're all valuable. I'm going to tell you that every consultant out there is going to provide value, and you're going to get your money's worth of any consultant you hire. I want you to understand that you're going to get something. You're going to get your money's worth. I had a consultant the whole time I practiced. And you know, $1 million in 85 was a lot of dentistry because crowns were $300 in those days. And if you can have the view from 35,000 feet and look over the next hill or the next two hills, only because someone has already been there, you see. That's what I provide. And it's not that the person in the office can't see it, but as Angela said, my job, the way I see it, is to empower you to become the leader, not to come in and solve problems for you. Because, you see, if I become a problem solver in a particular practice, I can tell you that when those problems are solved and the leader doesn't step up, as Angela has, next year there are more problems. And one of the things I've learned about dental staffs, and if I include the doctor in that group, you can come up with problems faster than I can come up with solutions. But once you're clear on the direction you're going, you're then able to make those decisions on your own. And you can see the problems coming. And what I see in so many dental offices is that the doctor is going in circles and they're solving the same problems they solved 10 years ago and 5 years ago and last year, and it's still the same problem. Nothing has changed, and the only thing that's going to change that is clarity of direction, and we call that vision. And the doctors who do well, and if you've read our book Playing Your A Game, the one characteristic that I find every time, and Saturday I spoke all day at the Florida Dental Meeting, and I spoke on leadership. And you know, the interesting thing is, doctors given a choice between listening to a lecture on leadership or a lecture on glue will take glue every time. And yet leadership is the key. Leadership is what makes your practice move forward. And what I find in so many practices, and listen, just in businesses, in families, government, everywhere, it's the same problems over and over and over again. And we solve the problem, and then we get some new staff, and we have the same problem again, and then we got to solve that problem again. But if you can get clear on the vision, and usually it's a matter of changing your level of thinking. You know, one of my heroes, the man named Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein one time said that it's insanity to try to solve a problem using the same level of thinking that you use to create the problem. And so one of the things that I work with clients on is changing the level of thinking. And the way I do that is by asking questions, not by giving you the solution. Because I give you the solution, you go with that, and as long as that solution works, hey, we're in great shape, and then there's another problem comes along. But if I can ask questions to get you to change your level of thinking, the next time a problem comes along, boy, you're as clear as can be on the question. See, in Angela's case at this point, I don't believe that she will ever have a team member who's not fully on board with her vision. She will recognize that immediately, and that person will be gone tomorrow.
Correct.
Because she's clear on what her vision is. And she will never again make exceptions. She will never again allow a team member to show up at 75 or 80% of that person's capacity. It's either you bring your A game or don't show up. And, you know, last Monday, I happened to be on coaching calls all day, and one of my clients, who's a very avid golfer, he made his call on time, and he said, Bill, we got to watch the finals of the U.S. Open in golf. And Tiger Wood, with a sore knee, brought his A game. And Rocco Mediate did an amazing job of staying even and tying up that tournament and staying there, and he was ahead for 10 holes in the final 18 holes. But you know what Tiger did? Tiger played his A game in the last four holes, and he beat him. He's a machine. And you see, that's what we're looking for in everybody that works in the office, is to do what Tiger does. And it's not rocket science. Good question. Boy, you got a long answer, didn't you?
Yeah, that's very important.
Okay, we've got time for one more question.
This is Robert Stafford in Portland.
Yes, Robert, I know you well. Happy Valley, Oregon. You moved.
I did.
Congratulations.
So my question is, you know, you're talking about a practice that is clear about who they're serving and not necessarily catering to people who cancel their appointments or who are insurance dependent or who are not on board with the type of dentistry that you want to do. So my question is, that takes a lot of patients to fuel that kind of a practice. Where do those come from? Where do you get the number of people that you get to be able to say, hey, no problem, if that isn't the kind of dentistry you want, we'll just move on to the next person?
It's not quite that way. We're just not talking people into treatment. But what you did, as I happen to know your story, you moved from a practice you've had for several years. You moved, what, 15 miles away to a new community. And your question is, I believe, how do I attract patients in this new community?
That's the question, yeah.
And marketing's the answer. You have to market. And what you have to do is design a marketing program that fits that community. And you don't get on the internet and start looking on some of the forums to find out what somebody did in Timbuktu, Kansas, and what they did in upstate New York or New York City. And you have to design something that works in that community. But, you know, you take a look at, does marketing work? Well, take a look at the same couple I just mentioned a moment ago, the Ulitskys, down in Jacksonville, Florida, and I have permission to talk about them because they're in our recording. You know, they went from zero to $870,000 in the first year in Jacksonville, Florida, starting from scratch. They raised it by another almost $200,000 the following year. And they're in their third year right now, and they'll do well somewhere 1.2 this year is what it looks like right now. And how do they do it? Well, they use have a high presence on the internet. You can check out their website. It's called Ulitsky Smiles, Olitsky Smiles. .com, Jacksonville, Florida. Check them out. They've hired a publicist. They're looking at a certain level of treatment that they want to do. They're attracting large cases. That's what they want to do. I'm not saying that's what everybody wants to do or should do, but that's what they do. There are patients out there, and one of the things that I see is that dentists, for the most part, are doing very little to market their practices. A lot of marketing is internal.
And if there's one thing that I could interject, Bill, in doing the marketing, any marketing plan you decide to venture into, make sure you're committed to it. I was very lucky that I did some things with television very early in my career. That really paid off. But you really have to do something for at least 6 months of marketing before you really start to see it snowball and return and really getting in terms of external. That was my experience anyway.
Yeah, I'll say about a year, actually. I think Angela saw a return on her television. Now, she's in a relatively small community of 60,000 people. Television works great in some communities. But you have to study that before you start doing something like that. We have a doctor in our book in the Northwest, Chris Mueller, up in Port Orchard, Washington, who started a direct mail campaign. In the first year, he spent $75,000 and saw a $78,000 return, which means he lost money.
Right.
And yet this year, he's getting 30 new patients a month from it. So you have to commit to something and stay with it. You just can't jump all over the map.
Hey, Bill, this is Michael
at
Rocket Dog.
Michael, go ahead. Michael, here we have an expert on marketing. Rocket Dog Dental does our marketing for us. Go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to kind of add to some of those comments. I think that Dr. Cameron's right on. If you're going to do marketing, you have to be committed to do it, and you definitely have to customize your marketing to your market, and you're really about brand building at that point so that, what you're doing today does pay off 2 and 5 years from now versus kind of going the cheap route as, you know, just give me a flyer or something so I can get patients in the door. You really have to identify the kind of patients that you're after in your vision, and then you have to create a marketing and a brand plan to attract those kinds of patients. Not every patient that's on the street.
Thank you. I mean, that's perfect. And see, Michael works with a lot of our clients, and he's real clear that it all starts with a vision. You have to determine, what do I do, who am I, what do I do, and for whom do I do it? And before you start to send out the message, you better figure out what the message is going to be. Good point, Michael.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank everyone. This has been a fantastic call. I want to thank Angela, number one, for giving up your evening. I know it's late for you, and I know your husband's taking care of your little boy tonight. And I appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your openness with these doctors. And I appreciate all the doctors asking these questions, and I appreciate your candidness on your answers. And what I would hope is that all of you learn something tonight. I would also hope that when one of our enrollment coordinators calls you, special teams coordinators calls you and would like to talk to you, at least return the call. I mean, this is one of the things that I'm absolutely committed to, is that it's just called polite way to do business. If you're not interested, just return the call and say, hey, that sounds great, but I'm not interested, and that's fine. We'll leave you alone. We will keep you on our mailing list unless you ask us to be removed, and we'll let you know about other calls, because I see several of you have been on several calls. But please return the call when someone calls you. And if any of you have any questions about any of these things we've talked about tonight, don't hesitate to send us an email, and we'll be happy to answer them. As most of you know, you probably picked up from Angela's conversation, we have a year-long coaching program that we do. We also do a one-day, very in-depth consultation. My wife and I do that, and we give you a written treatment plan, at which point you can decide to have us help you with that plan, or you can hire a local consultant, or you can do it yourself. It's a new plan that we've offered in the last few months, and it's working out quite well. So when one of the enrollers calls you, please return the call, and just, if you're interested, they'll set up a time and talk with you about if you could be one of our 50 doctors. We're not for everybody. We certainly make that clear. I see several doctors on the call, three or four that have been clients in the past, and that's excellent. I also see a doctor on there that, I knew him from Leon Roisman. I knew you 25 years. I won't say how many years ago I knew you from Quest. So, long time ago. We were both young, and so thank you very much for being on the call.
Thank you.
Thank you.